and the outline of my talk will be the following. The first, I will just summarize very briefly the fundamental observation effect about this galaxy. And then I will describe a model in a framework, the cosmological framework for disk galaxies. Then I will present some results and predictions of this model. And finally, I just point out, you know, just say some about the success and the problems of the current model. So the observed disk show both regularities and diversities. We all know that disks are exponential, roughly. And so it is described by two parameters. One is the center of brightness, and another is the scale length. However, if you go in to look at the distribution of these things, you find that, you know, there's a wide range of distribution.
Excuse me.
Oh, sorry. Yet. Okay.
Okay, so this was put in this way. Yeah.
Okay, so what's shown here is the distribution of a scale length, where you see that you know, observed disk length covered, you know, a factor of 10. Here. This is per unit volume. So just like, yeah. And if you look at the surface brightness and distribution, you get something like this, very wide, and this is the original Freeman disk, and later observations show. So you do have galaxies which deviate very much from the Freeman law. Not only in the photometry properties, photometrical properties, but also in the kinematics. I think we have heard that, well, we learned that, you know, disks have flat rotation curves. But when you look at it in detail, you find varieties of different kind of rotation curve shapes. We have learned, you know, from this this morning's discussion. Here, just show some, well, two examples, and you have this, you know, right, very rapid rising rotation curves, and you also have this gently rising rotation curve, probably, you know, due to selection effect. I don't know. Despite of these diversities, we do have a very very, you know, just a very rigorous, strong correlation about the disk galaxies. That's the Tully-Fisher relation. Right? And here, just showing an example of a recent observations. So you see, this is a correlation of the light with the kinematics. Right? And given that, you know, the disks showed those different diversities, how can we expect to have a correlation as strong, as tight as the Tully-Fisher relation here? So from theoretical point of view, of course, we want to construct models to understand all these basic facts about disk galaxies. And in particular, we want to understand the formation of disks in the general framework of our cosmogony. That is, we want to use the initial conditions which is responsible for the cosmic microwave background and probably large-scale structure to understand the properties of the disk galaxies. So this is a cartoon show what we are talking about. So since we put the things in a cosmological framework, what we start is a kind of, you know, initial conditions. And then we have a cosmology, and then due to gravitational instability, these things evolve to produce the large scale structure we observe today. And when you look into detail and you see there are high density regions when you zoom in, and if the gas is drag along with it, you have a high density gas clouds there. And the gas will cool because, you know, the cooling will be effective in these high density regions. And as it cools, it loses some pressure support, and then it will sink toward the center of the halo. And if the disk, if the mass have initial angular momentum, that the gas has initial angular momentum, then it will probably stop, you know, just settle into a disk. And in this kind of a picture, it is very useful to separate the formation into two steps. The one is that the formation of dark matter halo. Okay. And another is how the gas settle into the center of the halo to form a disk. And this is a kind of, you know, standard paradigm now. And many people have been working on this, starting from four Starshow, you know, it's two decades ago. So, and many people have been working on this. And I'm really just here to describe this kind of framework in some detail. So, we start from some one cosmogony, say, whatever you want, and you choose one. And from embodied simulations, like Julio Lavarro has already talked about, just from this model, you can have already get some information which might be relevant for disk formation. For example, we probably know how many dark matter halos there are, and this obviously is very important, because if disks form in dark matter halos, then maybe this determines the number density of disks that can form. Not only that, we also want to know the density profile of the dark matter halos. And if dark matter really dominates, then this probably will determine, you know, the rotation curve. At least it will have effect on that. And this is, well, is we have quite a good hand on this. Furthermore, oh, sorry. Oh, okay, so that maybe we're just in this. Is that okay? In this way? Okay. Well, the third one is, you know, just from hierarchical clustering, we also have a hand on the angular momentum, okay? And various simulations shows the angular momentum distribution of the dark matter halo has this kind of distribution. This is just from hierarchical clustering. And as I will show, and the angular momentum given by this hierarchical clustering is just enough to make a big disk we observe today, okay? That's a good thing, because at least we have something there. I will come back to that when, you know, discuss the problem of this kind of scenario. Okay, now, come to the disk part. Of course, gas dynamics is, you know, involved and many things involved, and we don't have a very good handle on it as for dark matter halos, right? We have to make some assumptions. The standard assumptions are that we assume the gas is initially well mixed with the dark matter halo, so that the density profile and the angular momentum profile of the gas is more or less the same as that of the dark matter halo. Okay? And since we know the halo profile and angular momentum, then we also know the gas profile and angular momentum. And the second, we assume that due to the cooling, the gas were just going in towards the center of the dark matter halo. But as it goes in, when it becomes gravitationally important, it will drag the dark matter with it. And we just use a very simple model, adiabatic contraction, to do that, to describe this kind of effect. And third, we assume as the gas goes in, it will conserve its angular momentum. Okay? And finally, well, this is in the model I'm going to describe, we assume an exponential disk. Okay? This we just take as observation input. Okay. Now, suppose we put part of the gas mass in a halo into the disk. Well, that's described just by the fraction between the ratio between the disk mass and the halo mass. We say this is MD. Of course, it should be perhaps smaller than the global fraction of the baryon mass. Okay, you take that, and then you can show, just make this assumption. So you can run through just this kind of circle to get to the final disk halo system. Well, it goes like this. For a given halo system, you know the mass of the halo, and you know angular momentum, okay? And given this, then you know, well, you know the mass fraction in that, you know the mass of the disk, and you also know the total angular momentum of the disk. Now, you make a guess of the scale height, the scale length, and then just use this function you get the central surface density, and use this, you get the exponential disk. Well, it just runs through this because of the adiabatic contraction, then you get another dark matter halo profile, new dark matter halo profile, because of the action of the disk. Then you calculate the rotation curve. And then, given the rotation curve and given the exponential disk in it, then you calculate the total angular momentum again. And then, of course, this should match this, and you just run through this iteratively. And then you get, finally, what you get is the mass of the disk, the scale length of the disk, the central surface density of the disk, and the rotation curve for a given set of parameter. Okay? And if you want to transform into observable quantities, then you have to assume mass to light ratio to transform the mass into light. Yeah. Yes, that's the assumption. That's the assumption, yeah. Okay. So now I just show some predictions of this kind of very simple model. What's shown here is the disk rotation curve. What I want to draw your attention to is that you do produce a variety of rotation curves. And that comes from you change your parameters. For example, here we just take this as a standard model where we, you know, this take a N of W profile with concentration factor of 10, and you put, 5% of total, the halo mass into the disk, and the angular momentum, well, is given by the spin parameter like this, you get more or less, flat rotation curve and blah, blah. And this panel is the same as this, except you increase the halo concentration factor, okay? What happens is that because the halo becomes more concentrated, then the rotation velocity gets boosted, okay? And the change from here to here is that you put more mass into the disk, and eventually the disk becomes self-gravitating, and you got a very, very peaked rotation curve here. Changing from here to here is that you assume a large specific angular momentum for disks. Here's 0.05 and 0.2. And what happens then, because of this high angular momentum, disk is spread out, and then you get this more or less gently rising rotation curve. And in this kind of model, you also expect, different disk size just because of you have angular momentum distribution. What's shown here is that this is the data. And what's shown here is the disk scale length as a function of disk circular velocity. Okay, this is the observed one. And this is what, these lines here just show what you would expect if you assume the lambda equals 0.1, and here lambda equals 0.025. We choose these two values because given that lambda distribution, then this is the upper, 10% percentage tile, and this is the low 10% tile. And you see this is more or less bracketed. The observed disk size is more or less bracketed in what you expected, okay? Of course, the disk is smaller at high redshifts. If you assume a disk form, say, at redshift 1 or 2, then your prediction becomes smaller. And actually, what's shown here, if you have a omega equals 1 model, even you go to redshift equals 1, then you already have a problem with the disk size because disk size becomes too small. That's what at redshift 0. Okay, so let's come to the telefacial relation. So what's shown here, say the dots here, is the Monte Carlo of this model I have just described. This is the telefacial relation predicted from this Monte Carlo sample. Okay? And superposed on that, if you can see, this is the dashed line, is the observed telefacial relation. Okay? Well, the thing I want to say is that the slope and the zero point that depending on what kind of mass to light ratio you assume are reproduced in this kind of model, as well as the small scatter. Scatter is quite small. And you may ask the reason. Well, let's say here we take the mass fraction in disk to be constant, but actually you can show that's not really required. That's shown here. We just consider, the zero point change in the Tully-Fisher relation, how this changes as we change the parameters of the model. And here plot is against the spin parameter cut. We include, cut for the sample. We do the Monte Carlo simulation, okay? And also we change the mass fraction from 0.1 to 0.025. And this is, in principle, what is observed, the scatter, maybe the real scatter, I don't know, maybe it's slightly larger or not. And you see, unless you go to very massive disks with quite low angular momentum, that's, here, this part, otherwise, it's still okay in the Tully-Fisher case. And this actually is recently also a recent point by a couple of other people like Navarro, Stamets, and Vandenbosch. And I think this is a very interesting point. I think it needs maybe a little bit more discussion. And this is not really just a trivial result. Let's discuss this a little bit in detail. For example, if we have an isolated exponential disk, isolated, I mean, if the disk rotation, disk really dominates the kinematics. So then you just take an exponential disk, then you can calculate the maximum rotation velocity, and this is just related to the disk properties in this way. And you can just cast this relation to something like a very similar, like Tully-Fisher relation, okay? So here the exponent is 4, but the amplitude depends on the disk surface brightness, okay? And the amplitude you can also calculate. Well, this is the factor here, and you see two things. Well, you can fiddle around to reduce the amplitude. Otherwise, you always get two bright disks for a given circular velocity, right? Because this is too large for a circular velocity like 200. Furthermore, if you consider this, any scatter in this I0, that's the disk central brightness, will introduce a scatter in the Tully-Fisher relation, right? And as I said, observed disk show a variety of this central surface brightness, and yet you have a very, very tight Tully-Fisher relation. So then in principle, this can be resolved. Well, that's a trivial result because we need the dark matter halos to get a flat rotation curve and other things, okay? But it shows that even just arguing this way, isolated disk does not work in this case. You need dark matter halo. So if you put dark matter halo, this relation can be costed in this way. This is very simple. You just, change this. Well, because now this maximum rotation curve depends not only on the disk, but also on the dark matter halo. Then what you get is a factor like this. Okay, other things does not change. Yeah. Now, you just take, this is the predicted one, and you just take the ratio of the predicted one to that of observed. Well, you get something like this, okay? This is it's close to one if you take the normal values of disk mass to light ratio and disk central surface brightness. Here is in I band. And you got this factor here. If you got this to be one, then this ratio here should be something like a 0.5. And what it says, disk should contribute about half of the gravitational force at the maximum rotation velocity, okay? Of course, this argument is not that strong because you can change the value here and, this is not a big factor here. But in this case, it helps in the scatter itself. This is just demonstrated very simply by this very simple argument. So now, suppose we increase the mass of the disk, but without changing the size of the disk, then what happens? Then, of course, the disk central density will go up by this factor, but the disk rotation rotation velocity will also increase by this factor, okay? Then, you just use this definition here. Then the new zero point will be, you know, proportionate to the old one, but with this factor here, okay? And here, this is, well, this is just a definition. Here, delta VH square is just taking into account the disk action, but at the moment, you can just forget about that, set to zero. And then what happens? If you have a halo domination, then you get this new zero point is the old one times this factor, okay? And if you have disk dominating, is the new one is, you know, the old one divided by this factor. So what happens if you have something between disk and halo dominating, you get more or less the zero point does not change anymore. Okay? So that also helps. Okay. Yeah? Yeah? No. Here it has nothing to do with the slope. It's just that I consider it as a single galaxy, it's zero point, right? So it has nothing to do with that, right? So you could do it slightly better, just given the model I described, and read it to see whether, you know, the simple argument here is correct or not. And it turns out to be yes. So what's shown here? What? Forget about the other panel. Just this is the zero point, right? This is the zero point I defined. And here is I plot the zero point as against the mass you put into the disk. Okay? Here I just randomly choosing, you know, the fraction to be 0.01 to 0.2, probably quite a reasonable range, right? And here just show the three curves here correspond to three choices of angle, the spin parameter, from quite a low one to quite a big one. If you remember, if you change this by this amount, you change the central surface density by a lot. But the zero point does not change that much. And if you change the disk mass by, you know, this factor of 20, then, you know, the zero point does not change that much. That's just due to the simple argument I gave before. It's just the interaction between disk and halos that reduce the scatter. So you do expect large scatters if you go to very, very low spin parameter and very, very high mass. That's expected if you put, in that case, you got to the isolated disk case. But for reasonable range of parameters, you always, you know, the scatter is always small. I think that's quite an interesting point because this is totally just depend on the gravity and you have nothing to do with star formation. It's just due to the interaction of the disk and the halos that gives you quite small scatter. And I draw your attention to here. Here I use this kind of halo profile. Well, that's just for, you know, you have to make a choice. And if you use NFW profile, you got more or less the same thing. But the concentration factor defined will have different values. And here, the concentration factor 7 correspond to NFW concentration factor about 3 or something like that. And this, you know, is quite low, where you have learned already. And if we change the concentration factor to the value maybe, you know, people think reasonable for CDM halos, that's, this is something like 20, and in this kind of profile corresponds to 40, well, so you can just plot it, it's very well. And other things does not change so much, except the zero point now is off by the observed one by a large amount. The reason, again, is simple. Because you have very concentrated halos, right? And the halo will dominate the kinematics. That contributes to too much for a given disk mass. Okay. 5 minutes, okay, that's good. Now, so this is just a summary. Here again, I just take, you know, that kind of model and run a Monte Carlo simulation. And so you change the, well, this is really just the telefacial relation. And here, arbitrarily, I change the parameters in a quite large range. For example, MD, I just randomly draw from uniform distribution from 0.01 to 0.1. And the lambda, again, using log normal distribution as I described. And, well, here this is something for historical reasons, because people using collision of dark matter, you would expect kind of, you know, dependence on Z dependence on C, but you can forget about that. What is shown here is that you can produce a wide range of disk properties like surface brightness, size, and yet can have a very, very tight telefacial relation. And the reason is just what I have explained. Okay. Okay, this is for the local disk galaxies. And since we put everything in, you know, cosmological framework, we can also predict something like, you know, the evolution of the disk. Disk populations have high redshifts. And the expectation is also, you know, very simple. You know, the size, of course, is proportional to the velocity times t. And if you go to high redshift, then t is smaller, then you expect for a given velocity, circular velocity, the disk should be smaller. Right. And then this is the other scaling. It's not that relevant for the talk here. And then since now disk can be observed at high redshift, you want to, well, you want to know whether, you know, observations are in fact consistent with this kind of expectation. So what is shown here is, again, using this simple formula. And you just take this out. To this side, you consider the ratio between RD and VC, and what left is lambda and another, you know, half constant. And since we know lambda has some distribution, and that may not depend on redshift, so what you get is, you know, for disks at different redshifts, you will have a distribution that's determined by lambda distribution, but with a 0 point shifted by this factor. Yeah? And they show, what's shown here, this is a local sample. It's more or less log normal distribution, in fact. And here is just a sample at a redshift about one. Okay. This is a very small sample. But you see that there is a shift. And in fact, the shift is what you more or less expect from, say, lambda CDM model, these kind of models. Okay, so I think I run out of time. I just maybe put on the summary sheet. So the success and the problems. I hope that I have convinced you that just in the general framework for, you know, structure formation, we do have some quite good handle about disk formation. And the model is quite successful. But, as some people have already asked, we have to assume, one assumption is that we need to assume disk material does not lose angular momentum significantly. This is a big problem at the moment, because simulations do show that disk can lose, you know, 90% of its angular momentum. Then we can never work, make it. Because disk angular momentum predicted by a hierarchical model is just enough, maybe, okay? And I don't know whether this is a problem anymore, given, you know, what we have learned. Earlier, there is a problem. There was a problem. So people say they when you observe disk rotation curves for different kind of galaxies, from faint to bright ones, you will find a systematic change of the rotation curve shape. Okay. If that is the case, it's difficult to understand in this model, because in this model, everything is more or less self-similar. Okay. And, well, I don't know, given that the observational uncertainties, maybe this will go away. And this, I don't know, if I think maybe it's not a problem if concentration is small, say 5 or so. And we have already heard that there's also quite a few uncertainties here. Maybe sometimes the C is really truly as low as 5 or so. But we do have a problem. If the concentration C has a large range of values, we cannot get the scatter correct. Because what I showed there is really just, I've changed the C from, 3 to 20. That's a large range, okay? But then if you also, the simulation shows that C have a large range distribution, then we would expect maybe a very large large scattering in the Tully-Fisher relation. Then we have a problem there. So I think that I'll just stop here. So thanks.